Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Reading the Salvo's War Cry magazine the other day, I was amazed to learn about a phenomenon called transplant tourism. It's a global trend where people from affluent nations needing a transplant, say a kidney or liver, will travel to buy one in a country where organs are more available. It sounds all very convenient until you realise the dark underside. The practice has fuelled a worldwide system of illegal organ trafficking, with impoverished people selling parts of their own body just to put food on the table. The World Health Organization is cracking down on the problem, as are various medical organizations. Professor Jeremy Chapman is the international president of the Transplantation Society. He's a renal physician or kidney doctor based in Sydney, and he joins me now. Welcome to Open House, Jeremy.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Now, medical tourism, there are actually now companies devoted to helping people get their medical procedures done overseas. Is this a recent phenomenon?
Well, I think we have to separate medical tourism from transplant tourism. Mm-hmm. Medical tourism is a perfectly legitimate practice whereby people will head to a country where they think they can get a procedure done quicker or better or cheaper than elsewhere. Now, of course, that's pretty much not the case, since Australia provides one of the best medical therapies in the world. So transplant tourism, on the other hand, is in pursuit of a kidney, liver, sometimes heart transplant, that people can't get at home because they can't find the donations that are necessary for their transplant. And what this means, of course, is that they are finding their organ donation from another country, from the individuals in another country. Sometimes that's a legitimate thing to do. So, for example, in the United Kingdom, if I needed a transplant, I might ask my one of my brothers, come across to Australia and donate me a kidney. Accepted and normal practice. What is not normal practice is, for example, me going to a third world country and buying an organ off somebody who can't afford to eat.
It's good to make that separation. There is the ethically okay, though, why would you do it? Because Australia is so good at, say, dental surgery or cosmetic surgery, but it's the transplant side of things that has resulted in this black market for organs.
Absolutely, yes. And of course, one can understand that this is a trade that's fueled by two separate problems. One is the lack of donations in your own country, and the other is the tremendous pressure that patients are under to find a solution. Sometimes they are deluded by brokers into believing that a solution is appropriate. So there are patients in this country, for example, who might be actually unsuitable for transplantation, where the risks of transplant are so big that it's not an acceptable risk for the individual. Those patients, of course, will be offered a transplant in a country and in a program that's driven solely by money. I've had one or two patients who've asked me about, you know, you won't accept me for a transplant, so shall I go abroad? My answer to that is always, do they ask you to pay before or after the transplant? Mm. And, of course, they always ask you to pay before the transplant because you're going to be dead after the transplant. So that brings people up short. And no, makes them think about what they're really doing.
No doubt. This black market, you mentioned third world countries. Can we be a bit more specific? Which countries are really affected here?
Well, the really good news about this is that over the last 3-4 years, the number of these illegal practices has fallen dramatically. So the World Health Organization estimated that about 10% of all transplants performed in the world, so that's about 10,000 transplants a year, were performed illegally for commercial gain and through illegal practices of purchase of organs or simply stealing them. Yeah. The numbers probably down to perhaps 1,000. So there's been a 90% reduction in this illegal practice over the last few years. So what's happened? In China, they have changed the rules. They've changed the rules on executions, which is where they were getting the majority of their organs. Now executed prisoners are not allowed to provide organs for anybody except their own family. That's a new law that's been brought in China. They are preventing transplantation of foreigners in China. And that has made a substantial impact. I'm not saying there aren't still problems there. I believe there are. And the Chinese Health Ministry itself is acknowledging that they have still work to do. But there has been a dramatic change in China. Pakistan, they've recently introduced laws and shut down the three or four hospitals that were churning through 3,000 or 4,000 people a year. In Egypt, there is still one hospital that has a reputation for continuing this practice, but all the other hospitals are coming into line with changes in the law in Egypt. On the other side, some of the countries that have, if you like, driven this, in other words, the wealthy countries where patients have plenty of money, but where the transplantation programs are relatively small, they've made big changes in increasing the transplantation capacity at home. And I single out Saudi Arabia and in Israel, both of whom have made substantial changes in reducing the flow of their citizens out of their country in search of donations.
How have things been changing recently, though, with governments working together and also the input of the World Health Assembly?
There's been a clear focus at the World Health Assembly and at the level of all governments around the world, demonstrated by the unanimous endorsement at the World Health Assembly about 3 or 4 weeks ago of the need to control and prevent and regulate these practices properly, to ensure that the impoverished individuals are not preyed upon by brokers, and to ensure that patients in need are provided with the maximum opportunities for transplantation. In our country, of course, we have the new national authority making substantial inroads into the problems that we have with donation in this country. In other countries, there have been new laws formed and new organizations formed, making a real focus on changing this trade. I think it came as a nasty shock to everybody how dramatically it had burgeoned during the early 2000s.
With the stories you hear about people who would sell their own organs, is it a poverty thing all the way? Is it simply that people are lured into this because they're offered great amounts of money? Or is there people are being forced into it? What are some of those stories, and what kind of situations are the people in that are giving up their organs?
Well, at the extreme end, I'm aware of two murders that have been proven to be undertaken to source organs for transplantation. And we're aware of them because the individuals involved are in courts of law or have been sentenced. You then come to the practices in several countries whereby executed prisoners were being provided the opportunity to donate their organs after they had been executed. The Transplantation Society's perspective on that is that anybody on death row is not in a position to make a voluntary donation, and this practice is wholly unacceptable. Then you come down to the situation where these practices are conducted in impoverished environments. So brokers go into the slums of Manila, the slums of Rio. They go into the refugee camps in Africa. And they source individuals who are in a very impoverished and vulnerable position and offer them illusions of money. And I say illusions of money because the amounts offered are generally not the amounts received. And there have been a number of studies which have looked at what the donor thought they were going to get and what they actually got. And so most of these individuals who are the brokers will be charging perhaps $50,000 for a kidney. The actual vendor of the organ will be getting maybe $2,000 or $3,000. And in fact, studies in India and in Pakistan have shown that after the majority of people who've sought this money have tried to get out of poverty, have tried to get out of indentured work, and that they've actually ended up worse off afterwards because they're less physically capable of the hard manual work they were undertaking before the procedure. So it's an illusion.
Earlier this year, an article came out of Pakistan saying about kidney bazaars. I just want you to paint the picture for us. I think we can imagine what that is, but I think we really need to fully understand what a kidney bazaar is and what the result of that article was.
Well, the way these trades have been run, brokers, the fast guys, the guys with the sharp-pointed shoes and the sharp-pointed suits, get out there and provides an illusion to indentured workers in villages that they can make a lot of money, and it's pretty simple. They go to a nice hospital with well-trained doctors who will look after them. It's a simple operation. You'll be fine afterwards, an illusion. So they tend to run through villages across a number of countries. Philippines, Pakistan are a couple of examples. They then provide the unevaluated vendors of organs to the hospitals where transplantation is performed. So it's a market. It's a lousy market. It's a market that leads to death and misery all around. And I'm very, very pleased to know that almost all countries in the world now are taking substantial steps for this. The World Health Organization has just endorsed the World Health Assembly, which is all nations of the world and their health departments, has just endorsed the new guiding principles, which make it clear that this is an unacceptable practice.
It's hard to believe that the hospitals involved in this are ignorant. They must have known, and even those few that still remain now, that they're dealing in illegal organ agencies.
Absolutely, yes. And some of them have been built for this purpose. One of my, in some ways, happiest pictures is of a hospital in Pakistan being pulled down by a bulldozer because it's no longer needed because the illegal trade has been stopped by the Pakistan government.
The other side of this, as well as looking at the vendors, which is a very cold way of looking at it, but also those receiving these transplants, there must be significant dangers and concerns involved. It's a no-brainer, but I think we need to have this spelled out, exactly how dangerous it would be to get a transplant in another country in these circumstances.
Well, of course, it is very dangerous, and the Transplantation Society has produced a brochure explaining just those dangers. So the problem is, when you go to a medical facility whose only intent is to operate on your wallet, everything else falls by the wayside. Your evaluation as suitability for transplantation, the prevention and of complications after transplantation, the evaluation of the donor for risk of transmission of disease. All of these things are ignored, and there's a further issue which we are seeing, and that is that these hospitals have only one goal in mind, and that is to get you out as fast as possible without rejection. Now, that means 5 to 7 days. They want you out. Now, we can use very heavy immune suppression and pretty much guarantee that nobody will reject an organ in the first week. So that's what they do. And then patients come back to their original countries and suffer the most incredible complications. There's a paper just coming out soon from one of the Middle European countries about patients coming back to their country. There's another from a very well-known United States hospital in which they've demonstrated something like a 20% mortality in that first 3 months that the patients come back, in addition to which, of course, there's a mortality of the patients who don't come back. It's a very, very risky business because only consideration of these hospitals is to take your money.
Hmm. Well, I guess that really leads us to be looking at our own backyard. We've got a pretty big role to play here, encouraging voluntary organ donation. Last year, our federal government committed a whole lot of funding to try and increase the number of people opting into organ donation here. How are we going on that front? Because there's a waiting list of 1,800 at the moment. How are we going with dealing with that list and getting Australians actually putting their names on the register?
Well, as I'm sure most of your listeners will have seen, there's a current campaign out there which is driven by the national authority that's been created in this country. At last, we have a single national authority responsible for getting the messages out to the community and organizing the hospital programs to maximize the opportunities for individuals to donate organs. Now, what's happened in the last year is they put their networks into place. They've employed and trained more than 100 individuals across the country to work in the hospitals. And what we're seeing now, particularly strongly in New South Wales, is a dramatic upturn in the number of donations and, in particular, in the number of notifications for potential donors. We still have a depressingly high refusal rate in this country. That is, individuals who are perfectly suitable for donation, their families say, no, we can't bear this. So unless the individual has said before they've died that they wish to be a donor, many families are at this terrible time of stress saying, no, I don't want to think about this. This is not going to happen. And so we are losing in this country many, many patients on the transplant waiting lists from death because they haven't had a transplant, while in the grave next to them was the organ that could have saved their lives. So I think we have a national authority. It is making inroads. We are seeing an upswing in transplantation over the last few months, and certainly May in New South Wales was the busiest that we've ever had.
Well, let's hope those donor numbers continue to increase. Professor Chapman, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Lovely to talk to you too.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.